Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining in for the Between the Ropes podcast. I am Brian Fritz. Michael Wiseman is not here this week, but I found somebody that's more than a suitable replacement for him. He's our friend Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, who will easily step into the shoes of one Michael Wiseman, even though we do need to be very gentle with Jason this week, because on the eve of the start of the NFL season, his starting quarterback for his Minnesota Vikings is lost for the season. Are you okay, Jason?
Not so much, but I, you know, to your credit, you lose Wiseman and you get a wise man.
That is very true, and I like that. I like that a lot. So, yeah, that's we were talking about this as we often do off the air.
Me being a wise man, yes, yeah, we do.
Between that and our fandom with sports and Teddy Bridgewater going down for the season a week before the NFL begins. How heavy has the drinking been, and how much worse will it get?
No heavy drinking yet. It's yesterday was just kind of it was just such a shocker, like real a non-contact injury. And you know, you go through that when initially it came out that they were taken by ambulance, it was like, all right, this isn't good. Let's hope that Teddy's got a flair for the dramatic that he hasn't shown before, and you know, something's gonna happen where he's okay. And of course he wasn't. And they're just in a horrible situation. They don't have depth. They have ancient Sean Hill as their starter right now. They have a rookie as his backup. They cut the third stringer, who they had to re-sign, and so he'll be showing up in time to play in the third preseason or the fourth preseason game. And they're obviously looking, I would assume, for more help. They had a kid named Tyler Heinicke who showed some promise, and I think he might even be the backup this year. He may have beaten out Hill for that job had he not kicked in a door for his friend and like severed tendons in his foot. So yeah. And it, by the way, the one position they don't have depth at, they seriously could have lost Adrian Peterson for the season and it wouldn't have been as big as a blow. As great as Adrian is, like, all right, we've rolled with McKinnon and Asiata before. It's not ideal, but you know, we've proven we can be okay with that. But you lose Teddy Bridgewater. Oh my, it's going to be a long season.
So what stage on the seven stages of denial are you on already? Or did you just fast forward to like four and then dealing with it from there?
I'm in acceptance mode right now. I've got the new Madden game. I haven't opened it yet. My thing is I try not to open it until my big fantasy football draft because I don't want to be distracted. I've got limited time as it is, and I need to get some prep work in for that. But I do need to open it now and download like the last roster update so I can actually use Teddy Bridgewater this year, unlike the Vikings.
I don't know if you want to do that. That might bring back some tough memories.
Well, I'm not going to spend whatever limited time I have playing in franchise mode with Sean Hill as my quarterback. So, yes, Teddy will be my starting quarterback.
Can't you just put Brett Favre back on your team when you play in fantasy?
I wish they'd do the real deal. I wish they'd. Why not? Let's have some fun. Call the old man up, see what he's doing. Pay him enough money, he'll probably show up. And the results won't be will probably be uglier than they would be with Sean Hill, but at least it'd be fun.
Hey, I've seen him in those commercials for those copper sleeve, and he says that he's just as good as ever, and he feels great, you know, and he goes, I'm back, you know, I can throw real great. So even though he's 50 years old now, go for it, man.
Let's do it. I'm down. I think it would be a blast. The only silver lining in all of this is that maybe I can actually afford to go to a game now if I buy them. You know, once the team establishes that they're not so good, that new stadium, those prices for resale are pretty steep. And Favre's only 46. He'll be 47 in October. He's got time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, who would you rather have? Favre or Kurt Warner?
Oh, Favre.
Really?
Well, Kurt, as good as Kurt was, I mean, it just seems like he takes one hit to the head and it's over. And yeah. I mean, Favre's had some injuries, but I mean, he was obviously the most durable guy in the history of the league. And I mean, neither one is happening, people. I'm not that delusional to think that Brett Favre is coming back. But I mean, Kurt Warner, yeah, I don't have any faith that he could stay in one piece.
So whose team will be having a worse record come the end of the season? Your Vikings or my Bears, with both teams in the same division?
You know, I actually still lean the Bears slightly.
I do,
only
too.
Because, well, you know, the Vikings, okay. You look at, now, Teddy, this was supposed to be a breakout year for him, and he looked very good in the preseason, the couple games he played and all that, and they were very excited about him. But they've kind of proven that they can play good defense now, and they haven't had a lot of production out of the quarterback position in the last couple of years. So if you can get someone in there who doesn't turn the ball over, which is why I cringe at the notion of Mark Sanchez coming to Minnesota, if that comes to fruition, you know, they can win some games by running the ball and playing, you know, the good Mike Zimmer style defense. And I don't know that the Bears are there yet. I really thought this was going to be a good Bears offense, and maybe it still will be, Brian, but I don't know. Just speeding through watching the starters in preseason, as I like to do. It's just a habit I got into back in my fanball days when I was writing about fantasy football. And now no fantasy football draft is complete without me speeding through all of the starters and any meaningful rookies. But your Bears look pretty rough, man. I wasn't impressed with anything offensively aside from Jeremy Langford from a fantasy perspective, and that's only because he's the guy there. You know, it's hard to find a workhorse back, and I think he'll be that for you guys.
Yeah, the offensive line sucks, and that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem they continue to have. When you got a good offensive line, protect your quarterback, it just allows you to do some things, and they've already lost the starting center for the year.
You can have Sullivan. He's out there.
Yeah, their best offensive lineman's hurt. You know, and might miss the first game of the season, so they got issues, man. I don't know. I mean,
how's the defense?
Last year wasn't that great. It should be better this year, but I don't think it's going to be stout. And they've got some nicks and bruises already on the defensive line. So, yeah, this is unless there's like a real big surprise, and John Fox is a good coach. This is really looking like it could be a bad season to the point where the Bears just say, let's just blow it up.
Well, tough. Here's the toughest part for if you're a Viking fan right now, aside from the season being lost. It's that, okay, you get the new stadium. That's awesome. Super Bowl's here next year. That's cool. But for me, the hard part is that Adrian Peterson's 31 years old. You don't know how much gas he has left in the tank. You don't even know if the team intends to keep him beyond this year. And so that was always my thing, is with Mike Zimmer taking over, it's like, let's hope they get good enough at a time when Adrian is still playing at a high level. And you had another season where now he's going to have to – I mean, the offense probably would have run through him anyway, but now it's really going to have to. And what's he going to – you know, there's no guarantee he's going to be good this year, let alone next year if and when Teddy Bridgewater's healthy. And so it just kind of feels like, boy, my fear is coming true that the rest of the team gets good at the same time Adrian Peterson declines.
Don't you say that about Adrian Peterson, because he's my top running back in my biggest fantasy league, okay? I just drafted him a couple of nights ago.
I don't think you should be disappointed. I mean, I know the mindset – that the Viking play-by-play announcer, host of a radio show here, said, you know, if Adrian was looking at 1,300 yards realistically going into this, he's got to be thinking 1,800 yards now is what he's going to have to do. You know, they're just going to – I know you and I kind of were going back and forth on DM yesterday, and you said, well, they're going to stack the box against him, but it's like they already do. It's not like Teddy has earned so much respect that they're not doing that already. I mean, it may be a little more than it would without, but I mean, Adrian's used to that. The offensive line is better, and so I wouldn't be looking for any repeat of the year where we had Christian Ponder, and he was yards away from breaking the all-time rushing record, but I think he can have a very productive season.
I hope Peterson has a big
season.
Unless
he hits that wall.
You don't even say, don't jinx him, man. Okay. I take my fantasy team. I've been in this fantasy league for many, many years. Like, you've been in one of yours. And
21 years, baby.
I've been in mine for about 16. And I'm in a second one. I'm breaking my rule for the second season in a row, because I used to only be in one. I did that. I've done that for like the last 4 or 5 years. I said I gave up on the multiple leagues, and then I got sucked back into one last year because of that damn Kevin Eck. And I blame him for putting me in a second one and making me go fantasy crazy again. So, and there's a certain wrestler that he knows that's in the league too, that's incognito, that I can't even say. But
Outback cool. Jack.
No, but it's a current guy. But it's
James Ellsworth.
That'd be great. It's somebody.
Yes, it would.
It's somebody that I would take great pleasure in beating. Let's put it that way. And last year he had a better record than me, so that was not fun.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to talk off air. You're gonna have to enlighten me here. Corporal Kirshner. Now you said somebody modern. The Headbangers. They're back.
It's not the Headbangers. Wow, what a return they had on SmackDown. SmackDown Live, that is, right?
The hell was that?
They bloodied up both Heath Slater and Rhino and lost.
Yeah, and I didn't get it. It's like, okay, you want your titles to mean something. Daniel Bryan's mocking the Universal Championship and all this. So you bring in the Headbangers to be the eighth team in the tournament who haven't been in a WWE ring in 16 years, and I don't even know how much they've been doing independently. And good for them. I mean, I'm happy they got the booking and all of that, but really, you put them in the tournament? And then did you happen to see the brackets for this, Brian?
I missed that.
They have American Alpha and the Usos on one side.
What?
So they're meeting in the semifinals. The other side is like the Hype Bros, whoever they be, the Vaudevillains, and then Rhino and Heath Slater and the Headbangers. So it's like great bracketology there. I don't know who put this together.
Oh, man, that's brutal. That's brutal, man. Come on, we gotta start doing some seeding here. I mean, the one and two seeds have got to be in the different sides. I mean, by the way, I gotta bring this up. Good for the Headbangers that they're on the show and everything.
Yeah.
But I saw these different people like in advance of it going, man, I'm such a huge Headbangers fan. I can't wait to see them back. I'm like, where were you 10 years ago when they were actually in the company?
16 years ago.
It was 16 years ago. I mean, I have never heard of like this, you know, legion of Headbanger fans before.
I had one friend who was kind of a casual wrestling fan who really liked heavy metal, who liked them, and like he would bring this up, and anyone who actually followed wrestling would just kind of roll their eyes at him. That's the only one I know. I'm sure they're out there somewhere. But yeah, it was on SmackDown. I don't remember the exact line they had, but I think it was on either on SmackDown or on the pre-show. They were setting up a Headbangers video, and it was something to the effect of, let's take a look at what an impact they had on the Attitude Era. I expected my screen to go blank for 30 seconds.
I was waiting for GTV.
Yeah, they had no effect on the Attitude Era. I remember Beaver Cleavage having more effect.
Yes, I know. It's just like, okay, they were a tag team. They were here. They didn't really do too much. I mean, they weren't a jobber team, but they weren't setting the world afire.
No, they just were Mosh and Thrasher and two very generic hard rock guys. And if you did like that kind of music, as I still do, it's kind of embarrassing. But good for them. I don't want to just hate on these guys because I'm happy for them. But I didn't understand that one.
Them and what was the guy on Raw? Johnny Dynamite?
Johnny Knockout?
Johnny Knockout. Dude, Johnny Knockout, I put, as soon as he dropped his infamous line of, I like big sweaty men, like I put that on Twitter, and like the next day he retweeted it. And he said,
that's his claim to fame now. That's it. Well, I guess he was on MTV too.
Oh, okay. He had some kind of comment too, like about, yes, I do, or something. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Johnny Knockout, big sweaty men.
What are they doing? I mean, okay, Ellsworth was awesome, and sure, he stole the spotlight from Strowman. I mean, it happens, but when you finally introduce a Mulkey like jobber, there's enhancement wrestlers and there's jobbers in my mind, Brian. I know that to some people they're the same. James Ellsworth is a freaking jobber, and there's nothing wrong with that. God bless him for it.
Right.
But you know, so I think you can only do that so often. You want eyes to be on the guy who is working with the enhancement wrestler. You know, the guy is supposed to be there to make the other guy look good. And as soon as he said that line, I didn't think once about Braun Strowman the rest of the match.
No, nobody did. And they're doing the same thing with Strowman and Nia Jax to the point where
identical.
Neither is special. I mean, now they're doing the, you know, interviewing the woman before the Nia Jax match. You had the guy in the mask this week that he couldn't even say anything because he was just like, yeah, I'll take this match. And then once he sees Braun Strowman, you know, coming down to the ring, he's like in awe and he's speechless. And Byron
Saxton. He doesn't watch Raw, apparently.
Yeah, Byron Saxton's just like, okay. And just, you know, skedaddles out of the ring and lets this guy get massacred, you know.
I want Braun to turn on Byron.
Well, Byron is a trained wrestler, so he could take a bump.
It's time.
I think I've seen Byron Saxton wrestle a few matches down here in Florida during his indie days.
Did he smile a lot?
I think he did. Byron did He did a lot of stuff. I mean, that dude, he wrestled, he was a ring announcer, he was a manager. I mean, he was all over the place.
I want to know who his dentist is, man. That guy has some nice teeth.
Tell me about it, right? I was like, maybe him and DDP have the same dentist.
Clearly not. No.
No?
Byron has nice teeth. I don't know what Dallas Page has going on, but...
he had the super white teeth going on.
I would say that whoever Byron's guy is doing better work.
Well, remember DDP had, you know, the pristine smile gimmick going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was nothing. It paled in comparison. I mean, it was just, he had, like, these big fake teeth. Nothing again. God, I just feel like I'm hating on everybody today, but... This is what happens when my starting quarterback goes down.
All the headbangers and DDP fans are going to be on us now because we hate him so much.
God dang.
Well, let's hate on some more people. Let's talk about The Miz and that whole situation going on. So before we actually get in specifics, we've seen this happen more and more over the last few weeks when it comes to WWE doing storylines that are getting people talking, whether it's the Lesnar-Orton match, The Miz and Daniel Bryan, and there's been a couple of other things too. So I guess WWE right now is like in this new era that's reality-based, you know, storylines that they're just trying to get people talking and making people really wonder, like, what's going on here? Let me see if I can figure this out. I mean, the Miz-Daniel Bryan thing got the bulk of attention from a lot of different places with people, you know, wondering, is this real? Is it not real? The other thing that got a lot of attention, which is even more ridiculous to me, was Stephanie McMahon fining Brock Lesnar $500, which got picked up on a lot of legit websites, including CNN. So I guess this is what we can expect from WWE going forward, is they want to continue to blur the lines and get people talking on social media when it comes to some of their storylines.
They do. It's weird. I watched that Talking Smack last night, and Daniel Bryan, it was hard to tell if they were setting up something where for down the road with him and Miz, as far as it being a bigger deal when all of a sudden Miz crashes the set or something. But he made it seem like, they're not allowed to go face-to-face anymore. Miz can't be on the show. He was almost like apologizing for it going the way it did.
Yeah.
And there was a big part of me was wondering, like, is he taking this approach because Vince McMahon got upset by this? And the only reason I asked that is that, remember how upset that Vince McMahon became with Steve Austin when Austin cut that promo about working with Brock Lesnar, and he was promising, you know, basically the idea was that Austin was teasing fans with something they're never going to deliver on. And I wonder if that's the mindset here with Daniel Bryan and Miz.
But where do you think this thing went? Because to me, it was a situation where they said, okay, we want you guys to go at it. We want there to be some kind of confrontation, but we are not going to script you. So you guys come up with a script on your own, but we want there to be some kind of interaction between the two of you on the show.
Yeah, and it was great. I mean, I really liked what they did, and I think they're missing out by not tying Daniel Bryan into something going forward. They played the thing on SmackDown, so they clearly weren't too bothered by it.
Right.
I mean, that's how they opened the show last night.
And it's a work. I mean, it's not something like, these guys. I know there's some people that will say, these guys went into business on their own. And I'm like, there's no way that either of them are doing it, especially Daniel.
No, I mean, Daniel Bryan, I think he's the new voice of the voiceless. I've called him that because in some of these mainstream interviews he'll do, he's saying things that most wrestlers wouldn't, because I don't think he has to care right now. He's in a position where I don't think he needs them. If they were to, like, fire him, well, then he's free to go work the independents if he wants to or something. You know, but I don't think he's kind of unfiltered in some of these interviews, which is really refreshing. But yeah, I mean, it was a really great thing they did on Talking Smack. It can't lead to Daniel Bryan and The Miz, unfortunately. But when I said I would have tied Daniel Bryan into it, What about introducing Roderick Strong that way, who's expected to be showing up here sometime in September? And or what about bringing up Samoa Joe? You know, just have Daniel Bryan introduce someone who represents his style, something along those lines, and then at least there's some follow-up. Instead, they transferred it into Dolph Ziggler without any attachment to Daniel Bryan whatsoever. And so I kind of felt like that was a missed opportunity, but I really like what they're doing with Miz. I mean, I've been a Miz apologist in the sense that I think his matches are better than people give him credit for. And when he's in there with the right person, he's not going to go out there and steal the show with any old person, that's for sure. But he's come a long way, and he's a hell of a talker. The problem is he was the A-lister, you know, and it just was such a – he played the gimmick well, but the gimmick was just so mid-card Bush League where it's like, why don't you ditch this A-lister and let this – you know, give this guy a little bit of an edge, and maybe you'll have a credible Intercontinental Champion. And I don't know that the approach they're taking – is going to lead to that because they're still playing it up like he's a coward, but at least he has dropped the A-lister material. I think they've taken a step forward with Miz.
I think that WWE is in a time right now where they're trying to take advantage of social media so much that I think they're thinking on a lot of things is it's so, you know, they're not looking into the future. They're not, you know, saying, okay, here's the long-term way we can look at this. It's all short-term based. And I think they say, let's win the 24-hour cycle. Because we see that so many times, you know, with the news, with politics, whatever. Let's just win the cycle. Let's get this in a cycle to where people are talking about it and kind of own this time period on a 24-hour, you know, period and just parse it out like that. And we saw that when it came to the way that they ended SummerSlam. We'll get people talking about it, whether they like it or not. They're going to talk about it. On Raw, we've got Kevin Owens as a new champion. They talked about it last week on Talking Smack. Hey, did you hear what The Miz and Daniel Bryan did? They got people talking about it, and they got people to go onto the network and watch it.
Heath Slater last night.
Yeah, Heath Slater. I mean, Rhino with his infatuation with cheese and crackers. So I think that's what they're just trying to do is they say, you know what, let's just worry about the now. And not, you know, into the future. And we'll try to figure it out. Or if we have to, we'll just short circuit it, which I think they did with Miz and Daniel Bryan. But I think they just look at it and say, let's own the cycle. Let's own the now and get people talking about it in social media and just get a buzz going and trending. And we'll take it from there.
Yeah, as long as you follow up, you know, you got to, if you create that buzz, you have to follow up properly. And I don't know that they're doing that with Miz and Daniel Bryan necessarily. We'll see where it goes. I mean, like I say, Miz is in a better place. I got a challenge for you. Can you name something that Rhino has done better in his entire WWE career than eat crackers and cheese whiz? Because that was the peak for me.
That's a good question. He told me to F off in the middle of a ring one time in TNA.
Yeah, see, that's TNA. I would have that at the top of my list, just knowing that he told you to F off, but that was TNA.
Should I explain that story?
I probably should now.
I was, when Christian won the TNA championship, TNA wanted to do a thing where fans rushed the ring. And basically, they didn't tell us what we were going to do. They just said, Christian's going to win the belt. We want fans to rush the ring. And I happened to be around. And through a friend of a friend of a friend, they're like, can you do us a solid and get people to go into the ring? And you kind of like lead the way. It was be like, hey, it's cool. We can all go into the ring. So I agreed, but they didn't tell me exactly all the particulars of the angle. And basically what the angle was is that Christian wins and Rhino jumps in the ring, teases that he's going to gore him, and then he's going to not gore him, and he's going to shake his hand. And everybody's going to come in the ring. It's going to be this big celebration. So Rhino's in the ring. Christian's in the ring. They haven't done anything yet. And security is like, go. And I go, I don't think we're supposed to go yet. And they go, go now. And it was one of the Harris boys. So who am I to say no to one of the Harris boys when he's yelling at me? So I went, and a couple other people followed. Immediately, there was like three of us, and I got in the ring, and Rhino saw me in the ring, turned to me, and said, back the bleep up. And I did just that. And they did their angle, and then everybody celebrated, and the ring filled up, because there's that one shot in TNA history of Christian winning the championship, and there's just fans all over the ring. Yeah, that was my little moment of infamy there.
Clearly, TNA would be in a better place today had they given you the correct time cue.
Yeah, and then the best part was when I'm in the back, and they're like, "Why did you go in the ring then?" I go, "I didn't want to." I go, "Your security guy told me to."
You threw one of the Harris twins under the bus? Are you insane?
Absolutely. I didn't think it was going to come back to me, man. I'm like, I was telling the truth.
And you lived to tell about it.
I did.
Have you encountered the Harris twin since then?
I don't know if I have or not.
You know what I'm guessing happened is you told the truth, and then none of them would confront the Harris twins about it.
I think that's a very, very good thing. And like,
so they just sat around, that damn Fritz.
Yeah, basically. They just kind of looked at me and they're like, "Why did you jump in the ring?" And I said, "I was told to, man." I go, "That so-and-so told me to." And I did. And I just kind of tried to stay, you know, over to the side. And they just were like, "Ah." And then that was it. That was the whole argument.
Just think of where TNA would be today.
Oh, the good times of TNA. Between that, I've whipped Jeff Jarrett with a leather belt in TNA. What else have I done? Hopefully nothing. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Well, and then you stole John Cena's thunder on the NXT show.
I did. Well, that's what
when
they
he
did.
Sat right next to you. Why would he do that? I mean, what is he thinking?
Like, I know.
Go sit next to some average Joe, not Brian Fritz, is going to steal the spotlight.
I just like that John was there, and I had heard a story of what he drove up in, because he drove from Tampa, and John said,
"A Yugo, 84 Yugo."
Well, I said, "Hi, John," and she goes, "Hi," he shook my hand, and I go, "How's the Ferrari doing?" And he goes, "Once it gets over 150, you know, it gets a little shaky." He said something like that. And I was just like, okay. Because I knew he had driven a Ferrari.
Once it goes over 150, wow.
It was something like that. It was just like this really ridiculous speed that he was allegedly driving at. So
I did have a 77 Chevy Caprice. Not exactly a Ferrari, but it buried the needle, I think, at 120.
Nice.
And I did that. And on the back roads in Wisconsin, you used to be able to get away with that. Mm-hmm. It's all straight away, and there's no, you know, it's like you can see for miles. So why not put your car to the limit? And yeah, it was still accelerating when it buried the needle. So I don't know how – that's the fastest I've ever gone, but I don't know how fast it was.
I don't think I've ever driven that fast. But I would have enjoyed driving John Cena's Ferrari.
Next time you're up here, I'll take you to Wisconsin. You gotta bring your car, though. We'll find out how fast your car can go.
Can't I just rent a car?
Well, even better, yeah.
Yeah,
get the insurance.
I'll rent a car. I get the insurance just for the one day, and we'll take it on the back roads of Wisconsin.
Right, perfect. Works for me.
Yeah, sure. Why not? So, but you know what? When I mentioned like the reality stuff, trying to get, you know, WWE's trying to own these cycles or whatever, I mentioned Kevin Owens. You know, that got a lot of attention. They didn't just do that one though to own the cycle. I mean, they did it to get a, you know, for a couple of reasons. One is because they wanted the attention off of it, but also because they wanted a different player, you know, as the champion there. And
yeah, fresh player.
Yeah, and the storyline that they're going with. So I wasn't surprised Kevin won. I thought he was going to win. I was surprised, like I'm sure everybody else was, with the angle with Triple H, you know, interfering and helping him win and where this is going to go now. So I guess this means, so Kevin's the champion, Rollins possibly turns babyface, and then Triple H is whatever he's going to do, which I don't know if that's going to be,
is
like,
is he a babyface?
I don't think so. I think, well, here's the thing. I could be dead wrong on this. I'm wondering if they're going to do like an NXT style storyline where Triple H is representing the NXT guys, and like you did at the Rollins, because, well, Rollins was the first NXT champion. You could say, well, Kevin made NXT into what it is today, and he put in the work, and he's the one that was the real star, you know, and, you know, whatever way they want to spin it. Maybe
that brief time he was there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do something like that. And could that also mean that other people get brought up? I don't know where this is going to go. I'm intrigued by it. I really thought it came out of left field, though.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. lot to say about that one. With the NXT thing, if you look at the roster on Raw, they would need to call people up. I mean, they're doing kind of a Cesaro's disgruntled gimmick. He could be part of it, but he's also tied up in this thing with Sheamus. And you would think that if – I'm guessing if it was an NXT type of thing, it's not going to be some big – all of NXT are the heels coming to get WWE. It's going to be a few handpicked guys from NXT and or with NXT history. And there's just not that many of them that you could really see in that type of a role on the Raw side of things, believe it or not. I was kind of struggling to figure people out. I would leave the NXT out of it if they were going to do something like that and make it more about Triple H and the role he's played behind the scenes in bringing people to the company. That way you can have Anderson and Gallows be part of it, for instance.
Sure. Where,
you know, they have no NXT history, but they can at least establish some connection if they want to. I mean, I'd love to see Joe come up. I'd love to see Bobby Roode. This wouldn't be the way to introduce Joe. You could introduce as kind of the muscle if you wanted to, but I don't think this would be a great way to introduce Shinsuke Nakamura. I wouldn't have him anywhere near this. So, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know where they're going with this. I don't think it's going to be NXT related. I might be the one wrong on that, but I just don't get that vibe. But I think maybe it has something to do with Hunter being bitter about the fact that Mick Foley was chosen to be the general manager. The authority goes, you know, something along those lines. The reason I question is he a heel or babyface is that you kind of look at I'm guessing heel, but you look at what he did. He gave Reigns a receipt. Reigns is the only thing that resembled a babyface in there. And to them, I think he is. To most people, he's not. But or at least to the vocal people, he's not. And then he screwed over Seth Rollins, who's not a babyface. And in fact, the week before was laughing in the face of Finn Balor for being injured. And then it was like he chose the lesser of two evils as far as the two heels were concerned. Now, I'm guessing this probably will lead to Seth Rollins becoming a babyface, but I don't know. Usually, I mean, unless they came up with this all this week, usually WWE can't help but foreshadow, even the week out if they knew they were going to do this. And just to have Rollins be as straight heel as he's been, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, just the short, the quick nature of the turnaround from, oh my God, our new champion is out, may have kind of forced their hand. But I one thing I want to touch on too is the finish, because I know people are complaining that they didn't put Kevin Owens over strong. It was all about Hunter. And I argue that I actually like this for the Kevin Owens character in WWE. And I think a safe argument to make, Brian, is that if you're someone who thinks they should have put him over clean somehow and really made him, I can listen to that. I don't think that's how they want Kevin Owens to be, though. I don't think they envision they view Kevin Owens as like this badass heel who can win a lot of matches clean. So I think they kind of look at him as the cheater, the shortcut guy. And so it's perfect for his character. And I like that he's now vulnerable. When you see Kevin Owens defending that championship, if he's in there with somebody who matters, you're going to be wondering, is this the night he drops that title?
Well, I like the idea, too, from the standpoint that Kevin Owens is a good enough talker that he'll find a way to spin it and play it off. Like, I earned this championship, you know, this is mine, I deserve this, and everything like that. And who knows what they're doing with the Triple H thing. I mean, the NXT thing is just something I think of off the top of my head, but maybe they're not going to go there, and it's probably better if they don't, or even if they fashion in a way, like you said, of bringing guys up. But I think what the weird thing is going to be here is, so the title characters in this are Rollins and Owens, and we're trying to figure out who's babyface, who's heel. It might be neither. It might just be where they go, you know, and you figure it out from there, because we can sit there and say, okay, well, Seth is going to be the baby face and Kevin Owens is going to be the heel. But then are you also telling me that if this is more of a Triple H Stephanie thing, the people are going to root for Stephanie McMahon more than they will for Triple H? Because
right. That
sure as hell is not going to happen.
No. I mean, Triple H has been established as the good guy to all the fans who cheer Kevin Owens and boo Roman Reigns. And I mean, it just, they see him as the proud papa of NXT. I mean, that's just how he's viewed now, to the point that, I mean, imagine even, you know, before NXT had Triple H, it suddenly inserted himself into the main event. It would have been a completely different reaction than it was when he did it last year And people, I really expected there to be outrage. And that just showed me how much the tide has turned when it comes to the perception of Triple H amongst wrestling fans. There wasn't this backlash that suddenly, you know, he's in the main event of the biggest WrestleMania of all time. It just was accepted. And few people complained about it. It really shocked me, Brian.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that, where people hated Triple H so much. Oh my God, he sabotages this, and he's got his fingerprints on that. And towards totally changed now because of what he's done with NXT. And when it comes to storyline, I could easily see something where he's not affiliated with Kevin Owens. He's not affiliated with anything. It was just a revenge thing to say, I got you, Steph. I got you, Mick. And I screwed over your boy and Seth. And yeah, he went into the ring and he helped Kevin Owens. And then he held up his arms afterwards. But maybe that was more of an infatuation of this guy's the champion and it's not Seth Rollins. And that's the play that they're going to go with here. But the turn for Triple H for the serious fan, it's been pretty interesting over like the last 12 to 18 months.
It had, yeah. I mean, it's just, he, for so many online wrestling, whatever term you want to go with, insider fans at one time, he was public enemy number one. You know, he really was, to the point that I felt like it became unfair. I mean, there were definitely things to criticize, but I mean, it was like Triple H was taking the blame for everything wrong, it felt like, for a while there. And now it's just, it's nothing. It only positive for most people. And so I just think there's a new wave of fans who see him as that proud pop of NXT. And then he's won over some of the longtime fans, and good for him. But it still surprises me with Hunter. Here's the thing with him. I think they're going to set up him and Rollins, and I don't know what the dynamic will be. And the weird part about Seth being a babyface over the long haul, I mean, it's a move they should have made to begin with.
Why did they bring him back? I mean,
they were obsessed with Roman Reigns being a babyface. I mean, that's been the biggest mistake. It's cost them so much money, and you know, they can get Rollins on course now if they do this. But didn't they just spend the previous week foreshadowing the big Finn Balor and Seth Rollins match for somewhere down the road, where Rollins laughing in his face after Finn was very respectful about thanking Seth Rollins for giving him the match of his life, and then Seth just comes out and laughs at an injured guy? I mean, I'm not saying you can't turn Seth somewhere down the road again, but I mean, that certainly seemed to be what they were looking at doing just a week ago.
How dare you remember a detail like that, Jason?
That's true. Yeah, well, and Vince would say, if I don't remember, nobody does. And the problem with that, of course, is that Vince has a horrible memory.
See, that's why I go back to that point that I made about the 24-hour cycle and just trying to get attention right then, because he'll be like, after a couple of days, people forget about this. Or, you know, we can easily figure out a way to get out of that. Who cares? Because I with Daniel Bryan and The Miz, I really think it's just like, all right, well, Daniel said we're not allowed to do anything on TV together, and that's how we end it. You know, and
as long as it's good shock that can lead to things as productive, it goes somewhere cool. I don't want shock for the sake of shock, as we would get from some Vince Russo booking, for instance.
Yes. Now, so explain this one to me, because I am totally perplexed by this. And I know that I'm sure they're going to follow up on this, or they better follow up. But I still need some explaining to try to wrap my head around this. What was going on between Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon on Raw?
Beats the hell out of me. I went back and watched it again. I still have no clue what that was all about.
That is the strangest segment I've seen in a long time, where Paul is asking for forgiveness and Stephanie is all ticked off about what Lesnar did to her brother. So Paul says, I'll pay the fine, and he rips out this wad of $1 bills and he's ripping them off one at a time. He's going to count the 500 before she bats the money out of his hands. And it was just like, after we thought this whole thing was, oh, well, she doesn't care what Lesnar did, and she's fine that he actually beat up Shane. She's just pretending to back up her brother. And then she's on TV on Monday, and she was just like, I'll do whatever it takes to defend my family and defend my brother. And what Lesnar did was over the line and la, la, la. And by the end of it, she's leaving the ring, once again trying to put Heyman in his spot. And then Paul is standing there with this weird smirk on his face. There's cash laying all over the place. And I don't know what the hell was accomplished.
I don't know, but I would have had like Tammy Sitch emerge from under the ring and just start gathering up the $1 bills.
If I was their ringside man, I would have been, you know, just gobbling it up as quickly as I could.
No, yeah, but I have no clue. I mean, it really didn't make much sense. And I thought, all right, once we saw Triple H, that's why I kind of like, all right, maybe I need to go back and check this out again. And no, I don't know how they're going to make it make sense. I don't know if they just didn't have a good plan. I mean, I guess the idea was that Heyman was cocky. Then he was kind of groveling. And then Stephanie, you know, and pointing out that Stephanie is trying to please her father and please the board of directors. And so I guess the idea is that, yeah, she wants bad things to happen to her brother, but she can't give the public perception that she does. Mm. But it doesn't make sense even, because Vince just told her in his last appearance that he's sick of the nice girl routine and he wants them at each other's throats. So why would Vince McMahon be down on this?
And the whole board of directors thing, which came out of nowhere. It's just like, what? I mean,
right.
I mean, we had this whole angle that they seem to be setting up about, you know, when it came to Shane and her and Lesnar, whether or not we're going to see Lesnar get Shane, which we still could see. And I'm not a big fan of, but I understand if they go in that direction, why they would do it. But you had this whole storyline set up of Stephanie fining Brock Lesnar for his hideous actions, $500. And Shane even talked about it on SmackDown a week ago about, you go, I can see right through this fine. You're not serious about it. And then there she is, like, defending her brother's honor on Raw. And I'm like, you guys are all over the map with this. It's one thing if you kind of change course on an angle, and we can complain about that. But when you've got everybody scratching their heads going, I don't know what's going on here. I don't get this. And yes, we expect them to explain it farther, or hopefully they do, and expand on this in the coming weeks. But this is one of the real head scratchers I've seen in a long time. And people just left sitting there going, huh?
And by the way, Stephanie is a member of the board of directors.
Of course she is.
So are they trying to say she has to please the rest of them? Yeah, I don't know what they were, what the point
she's
was
being groomed, you know. Yeah.
I just know that when she fined him $500, I thought it was hilarious. And
it was great.
I was, not to pick on my own Twitter followers, at Pro Wrestling Net, I'll sneak in a quick plug.
Yeah.
But there were people like, it should have been more. That's ridiculous. Like thinking that it was a legitimate fine for Brock opening up Randy with the elbows at SummerSlam. And I had to tell people, like, it's a work. So, but when that happened, I thought it was awesome. I'm like, okay. Because it didn't make sense that Stephanie was outraged by this on Raw anyway. But now that once she fined him $500, and once people kind of figured, oh, okay, it is a storyline, it's funny. I thought she should have come back. And when Heyman gave her the $500, I thought she should have handed it back and awarded Brock match of the night. And that was his bonus, was $500, or better yet, even $1,000. Brock comes out $500 ahead on the deal. And so you just see through it. But that's the thing, is I don't know what they're trying to do with Stephanie. So if she's a babyface, I mean, I guess the idea is that she's conflicted, but I don't care. That's the problem, is I don't care about the McMahon family drama. And as fun as it was to see Triple H just appear out of nowhere like that, I really liked the angle on Monday. I'm very fearful of where it's going. I mean, are we just getting back to the authority feuding with one another? That doesn't excite me. I'm over authority figures in wrestling.
And I think a lot of people, and myself included, are over this whole Stephanie has to get the upper hand on everybody. And she has
that's why I was so shocked Heyman was allowed to stand there and smile at the end. I thought she was going to see him on the big screen and come back and slap him.
Right. And it's just like, no matter what, she will never get her comeuppance. She has to be the one that puts everybody down, how big they are, you know, no matter what the situation is, she's the one that has to come on the end looking like the stronger person. And that story has gotten old a long time ago, and they still continue to do it for whatever reason. But, you know, it is what it is at this point, and hopefully they play this out and we get some more details on it and see if this goes someplace. On SmackDown, I'm wondering, you know, when it comes to the championship picture, where they're going. Well, let's start here because, okay, they're going to do this match, you know, in a week and a half at Backlash. They're going to do Ambrose against AJ Styles.
Right.
You and I have had this conversation, especially on your podcast.
About how annoying it is to have it on first night of Sunday Night Football.
That's one of the things. And by the way, kudos to you and the power that you have of getting an NXT show moved time-wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Minnesota. I mean, if anybody doesn't know this story, there was an NXT show, NXT coming to Minnesota for the first time, going head-to-head with Vikings football, and Jason led the charge to get WWE to change the NXT show from a night show to an afternoon show so they would not go head-to-head.
Not only was it, okay, like, it'll happen sometime with something like that. It still would be foolish of them to do. This is the first regular season game in the new Viking Stadium, and it's against the hated Green Bay Packers. It's a huge deal for anyone, you know, well, not anyone, but just about anyone who would have thought about going to that show in Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm sure the show would have done okay, but it was like, what are you thinking? Why would you do this? And so, yes, I did let someone that I know in WWE know. It was changed to a matinee show, and I even told that person, in my own mind, I'm going to think I'm a big deal and that I changed it. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Just let me have this one. So
absolutely.
I probably had nothing to do with it, but I'm taking full credit.
You should take full credit. And now you can actually go to both shows, or you can at least go to the NXT show and watch the Vikings game that night.
Well, I may see what kind of power I really have by calling that person back and going, hey, now that Teddy's out, you guys want to just move it back to the night? I really don't need to see the Packers beat the hell out of the Vikings in the first game at the new stadium.
Well, maybe you should see if you can get a good ticket to the game.
Well, that is the one nice thing is I can actually, at some point, I think if the Vikings are lousy enough, I'll be able to get an affordable ticket. Those resale values are pretty steep, but I think I'll be able to actually get to a game at the new stadium this year. And looking at some of those prices early on, I was like, well, hopefully next year.
Yeah, but exactly.
So, yeah, at least I'll be able to see the stadium. The other thing I'm holding out for is a Guns N' Roses show there. I know you guys got them down there, and I think the stadium basically opened just a little too late to have it here. I actually talked to somebody in my local radio station that I'm in a fantasy league with, and he said we were supposed to get one of those shows that ended up – Chicago ended up with two, and they were talking about coming here, but the stadium wasn't ready yet, and they didn't want to go to TCF and deal – or the Twin Stadium and deal with them. And so, but it sounds like sometime next year I will finally get to see the reunited, well, 3/5 of Guns N' Roses.
They were really, really good, and I'm very happy that I went to that show. And
they always are.
I'm surprised you don't go to Chicago to go see them.
I don't remember why. There was I think it was like 4th of July weekend or something.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a reason, because I talked about it, and I whined about it that whole weekend.
Let's talk about something we've talked about on your podcast, where I was going to, and that's...
Yeah.
So Dean Ambrose is the champion, because there's a lot of fans that are fans of Dean, and he is something that is different when it comes to personality-wise, but you and I have had this conversation when it comes to Dean, because what you see on TV is Dean Ambrose. That's how he really is. I've interviewed him 4 or 5 times. He's always acted like that. Obviously, he went on Stone Cold's podcast on the WWE Network. People saw that side of him, and they saw that he is a little bit different than a lot of other people. You know, I'm not saying he's weird. He's just beats to, you know, his own drum.
He's unique.
Yeah, you know, he is a unique guy. And I think anybody that's ever interviewed him before will say the same thing. That's who he is. He's just unique. He's different. He's not going to make any apologies for it. But I do wonder, you know, is that really championship material from a standpoint of more than just being the in-ring worker? And if people want to argue about that, I mean, you can. But there's so many other things that go into, you know, having that position within the company. And I'm not saying that Dean doesn't deserve the opportunity. I just wonder if WWE sees him as a long-term champion and sees him as a guy that can really carry a brand, because as talented of a guy I think Dean is, I don't think he's that guy.
Not as a babyface. He's not the guy.
Yeah.
I still really look forward to the Dean Ambrose heel run whenever that comes. But, there are some diehard Ambrose fans, because I'll hear from them anytime I say – what I just told you, he's not the guy. He's not the AJ Styles needs to win that championship, but they need to do some tweaking of the way they're presenting AJ Styles right now in order for that to have complete, you know, as much impact as it should. But with Dean, he doesn't strike me as a guy you want as the face of your brand as a babyface right now. He just, the WWE championship felt number two before the Universal Championship had ever been seen, before there'd ever been a match for that championship. As soon as they told you what the Fatal 4-Way match was, it felt bigger. The Universal Championship felt bigger than the WWE Championship, and Ambrose is part of that. Granted, a lot, you know, some of it too was that he was facing Dolph Ziggler, who just isn't a guy that we're thinking about as a real title contender at this point. But Ambrose is part of that problem, and I think the Ambrose fans want to point to Dean and or point to Ziggler, and now they're going to say, "Well, let's see what happens with AJ." And AJ's the guy who should be winning that championship, and I think he will. Where I will defend Dean, though, and this will shock people who are convinced that I just hate Dean, and I don't. I think he's a good number two. Like when he was headlining the B shows, the B House Show tour, cool. I just don't think he's like long-term world champion material. But where I defend him is with all these people who preach about, oh, it'd be nice to have something other than the same old corporate crap, and WWE's gone too corporate, and everybody's just trying to say the right thing in these podcasts to please the company. You get somebody who goes out there and does it differently, and what are people saying? Oh, boy, he really rocked the boat. He needs to be a little more corporate with his answers if you're going to be in that position. It's like, you can't have it both ways.
Right. Yeah, you can't. You know, I think it's funny because Austin said this on the podcast with him, that he really wants to see Dean push buttons and really, you know, push the limits. And hey, guess what? You know, easier said than done. It's a different time than when Steve was there. I get what Steve's message is, though. And I don't think Dean can really do that and take what we see on television as far as he wants, being a babyface. He has to be a heel. He has to be even more unhinged. He has to be, you know, take it to the limit on that side. He has to be more dastardly or whatever. I mean, that's when I think we're really going to see the best work of Dean Ambrose. But as far as AJ Styles, to me, he should win the championship because it feels like there is this wave of AJ Styles, and we're just seeing him riding it right now when it comes to his popularity and just what he can do for that company. I think WWE wasn't shocked, but I think they've been very surprised by the popularity of AJ Styles and how well he's done, especially on promos. And it just feels like it's his time. It's the right time. He's hot. You got to ride the hot hand right now and you go with it. And then when John,
give it to that little twerp,
give it to that little twerp that was going to get squashed at WrestleMania by the big guy. And then when John Cena is ready to come back, then you've got the, you know, you've got John Cena, who's now the champion, and he's owning the show, and here comes John Cena to challenge him on it.
Yep, I mean, that's the direction you go in. The tweaks I would make is, I mean, number one, when AJ comes out wearing that headband, he looks like an 80s jock villain, like something out of an 80s movie.
He was doing a Dude Love impersonation.
It's just a little too cheesy, and some of AJ's bragging is a little too cheesy, and it's almost pest heel. It's there's a little bit of Miz in there, too. The difference is he's a guy who backs it up. You know, he beat John Cena, but I'd still like to see them present him in a way where he's more of a serious champion than that. I mean, he should certainly have strong heel qualities, but I don't want to see him just be this completely over-the-top character. I think that's the vision, though, is because of John Cena. I'm guessing the storyline with Cena placing the wristband down is that he basically – and stepping aside, he was there last night, and they didn't use him on TV. So when he comes back, I think his story is going to be that he gave AJ a chance to be that guy. He was impressed by him, but he didn't live up to it. And so I think because of AJ taking shortcuts and things like that. So I think AJ's playing this role for a reason, but I don't think it's going to be as impactful as it could be if you just really made AJ that strong heel champion that just could beat anybody and wasn't, and they may take that approach in most matches of having him go over clean on people, but I think you need to back it up with the character too, where it's not so wonky. There's just a little bit of wonkiness to the character, but I can't believe that this is the same AJ Styles that we saw in TNA all those years as far as his mic work is concerned. I mean, he's always been a phenomenal wrestler, I guess pun intended, but the mic work now, I mean, he just looks at ease, Brian. He just looks like he's out there. When he started in WWE, he looked so nervous. He looked like he was trying to remember all of his lines and all of this. And then the guy watching on SmackDown just last night, I'm like, wow, this guy is just he's in his own now.
I think going to Japan was the best thing that could have happened to him in his career. With the confidence that the management there gave him in his first match out, he won the IWGP Championship. But also being able to have a little bit more freedom in when it came to what he did on the mic and being a part of the Bullet Club, being with guys like Anderson and Gallows, how much they loosened him up, how much fun they had, you know, kind of the free reign, like I said, and plus him being validated as being like the best worker in the world, or, you know, many times positioned in that because he had that championship, and just how good he was in the ring and going there and having those matches he did with the likes of Nakamura and Tanahashi and Okada. By doing all of that, I think he just took his confidence to another level. And with it, his mic level went to another level, and just having fun with those guys who are super friends of his now. I think it changed AJ from being like this extremely talented, very good professional wrestler to an elite, you know, wrestler and pro wrestler when it came to, you know, what he does in and out of the ring. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he lost some of that confidence when he came to WWE. I mean, he's a guy that was, I don't want to say coddled by TNA, because some wrestlers would argue that he was, but
he was pigeonholed there, though. He was pigeonholed. Like, there was a certain way that they wanted to use him.
At the same time, they really took care of him. You know, he was their top guy way more often than not, and so he was very respected within that company. And Dixie obviously had some, you know, really liked AJ. And so I think he was used to being listened to and things like that. You go to Japan, you instantly get that top championship, you're the man there, and then you come to WWE, and, you know, the old saying that what you do outside of WWE doesn't matter, you, in some way, he was kind of not starting from scratch by any means, but starting from scratch within WWE, and those early promos just showed, like, there was a lack of confidence. But I think now that I think he's won the support of management, and I think that's the key right now. Along with everything you said, now he has that mojo going. He just looks like a guy who is very comfortable with what he's doing, and I think some of that stems from the fact that he doesn't have Vince McMahon calling him a little twerp behind his back and having, you know, and planning to have Ryback beat him at Mania. I'm guessing Vince is really, you know, into this. I mean, they clearly have big plans for AJ Styles, and rightfully so.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in TNA, though, there was always just something where they would say AJ is our guy. You know, he is our flagship guy. He's the guy that we're building around. But you still felt like that hesitation, like, are they really pushing him? Like, he is the guy.
Oh, they'd mark out for whoever the WWE cast-off of the month was.
Exactly. And they played with AJ's character a few times, including that horrific, you're the next Ric Flair.
Right.
Between that, the storyline over the baby mama and all that, I mean, oh my God. I mean,
Flair Lynch.
Yes. I mean, there were so many dumb things like that. And like I said, where he's our guy, he's our main guy, but yet they never really positioned him in that way. There was just something where they fell short. And
they didn't know how to make a top guy.
They didn't know what they had. They didn't know how to make a top guy. I mean, hell, even with some of the WWE talent that they brought over there, I mean, all of them, they marginalized them so quick, whether it was Christian or Booker T, Kurt Angle, which was, you know, just given to them on a silver platter. And he was marginalized within 6 months.
Look what they did with him and Joe. I mean, you look at, as far as TNA top guys, I mean, you can point to different eras and go, this was the top guy. But if you're watching TV, it wasn't always that apparent. And it took them all this time. Brian, I think the true top guy in that promotion that felt like, okay, this is the guy. Maybe I'm forgetting someone. I'm thinking of Bully Ray. It took them that long where you'd watch the TV to know he's the guy, because he always had some management saga with Hogan and Bischoff and all of that at different times. And and people kind of coming and going, like you mentioned Christian, when they tried to make him, he just, you know, he was fine, but he felt like a WWE cast off where Bully Ray, things built around, they had the Aces and Eights storyline around him, and he just dominated television, and he had Brooke Hogan with them, and it took them that long. It felt like he had the company completely behind him more than AJ ever did consistently.
Well, Jeff Jarrett had the company behind him for a little while.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, a little bit different there with Jeff being the one calling the shots.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess as far as guys who didn't own a part of the company, yes, you know, Bully's the first guy.
Hey, Jeff is getting the championship again. What a coincidence. You know that he owns this company, right?
There's just nobody else. It's got to be me, brother.
You know what? I don't know if we can trust him to be the champion, but I know who we can trust. A little Double J. Yeah.
Oh, he laid those belt shots in, Fritzy.
Hey, I got a couple in on me. He still got some receipts coming my way, though, allegedly. So
he better not go to the Tennessee State Fair.
He says that I got 10 in on him, so he had to pay me back tenfold with 100, and he's already gotten one on me, where he legitimately took off, snuck up behind me while taking off his belt and hitting me in the back.
Good job, Jeff Jarrett.
Yes, it was a setup. And you know what? I blame Jerry Lynn for it. He set me up. He was
good
in
job,
on
job, Jerry Lynn. Wow.
He was in on the ruse all along.
Good for Jerry.
And I had a Jerry Lynn Mark t-shirt made. Unbelievable.
Yes, you did. That's right.
I still have it. I've only worn it that one time for Jerry's retirement match, which I think stunned other people in our party there, including a Wade Keller, when I took off my flannel shirt button-up, and I'm wearing a black t-shirt that says Jerry Lynn Mark as a joke, and everybody's like, uh-oh, what's going on here?
Jerry laughed. That's the only thing that matters.
Jerry did laugh, and that's all I cared about. I had this shirt made, and I got to wear it that one time for his retirement match. Which,
you know, that same group is that did the Lynn retirement. They're having a show. It's somewhat close to home for me. It's only like 20-25 minutes away. Ooh. And it's not the same venue, but it's got Cody Rhodes in the main event.
Will he be facing Sean Waltman, who might possibly have another accident?
No. Colt Cabana.
Oh, okay, that's safer.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. They don't. It's God, I want to get it right. It's heavy on wrestling.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll not have any anal tearing on this show.
And if we do, I'm not letting you talk me into giving anyone a ride anywhere.
How long did it take you to clean up your car with Sean Waltman and his ripped butthole in the back?
I've never been so happy that I was talked into getting leather seats. The cleanup was actually easy. And thank God. Like cloth, yeah, you'd still be seeing it.
Oh,
yeah.
That'd be worse. Oh.
Thank goodness for leather seats.
Oh, man. A couple of things before we get out of here. So Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton are facing each other on a house show in Chicago. What the hell?
You know, it's not the first time we've seen Brock work a big market house show. It's weird because they have the pay-per-view the next night, but I think he has some sort of a deal where he does a certain number of house shows, and so this is one they're doing, a bigger market like in Chicago. And it was originally – he wasn't even advertised. It was originally going to be Balor against Rollins, and so I don't know if they just figured, let's do it now. I don't know why you'd have Brock signed to a bunch of house shows. It's kind of – strange to me. I mean, I'm sure they don't pay as much as the pay-per-views, but I guess I'd just take all that house show money and combine it into one more pay-per-view if it were me.
I wonder if this is going to be the quote-unquote blow-off, because like there's a couple of different directions that can go with Lesnar going forward towards WrestleMania next year, and I don't know if Orton's part of it. I mean, you could easily make Randy a part of it considering the finish to that match, but I don't know if that's the plan, really, is to do Orton against Lesnar on a big stage again.
I got my closure. I mean, Randy talked that they'd do it again somewhere down the road, but he didn't make it seem like it was anything imminent. I don't think it needs to be. I mean, if they went back to that match at WrestleMania, for instance, I'd kind of look at it as a letdown just because it was so decisive in terms of Brock busting him. It wasn't like there was any controversy there. They answered the question of whether Brock could take an RKO, which I felt if you were going to go back to that match, I think it was a mistake. I would have had Randy hit the RKO outside the ring as he did on the broadcast table and then struggled to get Brock back in the ring and never hit it again. They had him hit it a second time in the ring and Brock kicked out. And so you kind of ruined the whole, it only takes one to go to Viperville, because Brock proved that he can kick out of it. So I kind of felt like if you're going back to that match, not just for a house show, that's fine. It's a big enough deal to get Orton and Lesnar at a house show. But if you're going to go back to it in a meaningful way on pay-per-view, yeah, you kind of screwed up.
I really think that there's going to be no finish to this house show match. It's going to be 5 minutes. Orton's going to get DQ'd for using weapons. And like it'll end with him hitting an RKO and doing a pose.
Yeah, so, you know, they may put Brock over clean. I mean, it's a house show.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But, yeah, I mean, Orton may be the guy standing tall at the end of it. You know, that kind of Brock tries to rough him up again afterward, and Randy comes back and gives him that RKO. I could definitely see that. I mean, it's going to get more attention from, you know, people listening to a show like this one. It's going to, you know, on the internet, that result is going to be more read than any, you know, most other house show results, that's for sure. But to the, you know, the rest of the WWE audience, unless they just choose to play it up on TV, they're not even going to know what happened.
So what do you think WWE is doing or where they're going to go with Cesaro and Dolph Ziggler? And I bring up those two guys in particular because I think they're in pretty similar situations, and that there's some fans that could see them in a different light. I mean, we just saw Ziggler come out of nowhere to like be in a main event match for a world championship at SummerSlam and then get beat pretty decisively. So it's like he wins this four-way. He's, you know, in a main event at SummerSlam, and then now he's just back to being what he was before that. Cesaro is a guy that a lot of people have wanted to get behind, and we've heard other people say he should be in a better position. And they've got him in this best of seven right now against Sheamus. And as much as some people will talk about, well, now with the draft and, you know, the lack of depth on each roster, they've got to push some other guys a little bit higher than they did before. I don't think that's the case with either of these guys necessarily. Even with Cesaro, who really hasn't been a main event guy yet, but I just don't know if that's ever going to be in the cards for those guys, or at least not in the near future.
No, I mean, I wish Cesaro was on SmackDown.
Oh, yeah.
He'd mean more there. Now, I said the same thing about Kevin Owens, and look what happened there. But I don't think that was going to happen. I don't think they'd be doing anything meaningful with Kevin Owens had it not been for the Balor injury. But Cesaro just strikes me as a guy who could be a real player on the SmackDown side and on Raw. Yeah, he'll probably win this best of seven over Sheamus and get his title match. And it's, you know, Kevin Owens and Cesaro can be a lot of fun. But I don't really see it going anywhere. Now, maybe, you know, if there is something with Triple H and former NXT talent or something like that, well, maybe you turn him heel. And I think that's where he's going to be best off. There's obviously people who really like Cesaro's work and respect him. You can just tell he doesn't connect with everybody in that audience. They might cheer for the swing. They might cheer for the running forearms in the corner. But it's not like they just can't wait to see Cesaro. You know, he just hasn't made that type of connection, and Cesaro fans will argue it's because they haven't really pushed him as aggressively as they could. But I even if they did, I just don't know that he's that guy. They should be doing more with him than they are, but I don't know that he's the guy that needs to be your world champion or consistently at that level as a babyface anyway.
Yeah, I don't know what they want to do with Cesaro. I really think
they're they know.
Yeah, I don't think they know what they want to do. And they're like, all right, let's do this for now. And, you know, they're wondering, like, is he going to catch lightning in a bottle? Like, is there going to be this big uprising? Is it going to be something that really catches on with him? Or is he just a guy that we feel like we can put in a position? Like, if we really want to elevate him real quickly on a temporary basis, we can. Otherwise, he's just a good, you know, mid-card, upper mid-card guy. And that's kind of the way that they look at Ziggler, too. He's like this great utility player that they have there that, oh, we'll bounce them all around. And if we need to put somebody, you know, in a higher position on a moment's notice, well, we've got Dolph, you know, and that's what they're going to do with him.
Dolph, there's definitely something missing. I mean, I don't think I'll feel bad if we find out like they're the ones telling him to do this and he doesn't want to do it. But I don't think this is the case. It's the guy. I mean, he had the stonewashed jeans on last night. He wears ring gear that's like modeled after 80s heavy metal bands, and you and I enjoy some of that stuff, but like he gets his title match and it looked like it was some political statement, and I've had more than one person tell me, no, that was based on some rat song. Like,
right.
Why would you? I like that music and I'm 44 years old, Brian. And I don't even remember that song. Now, I wasn't the biggest Rat fan or anything like that, but I remember most of their couple of hits. But I had no recollection of that song, even when it was explained to me. He just makes these weird attire choices, and he always has. I think he wants to be like this weird 80s throwback. And, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's mid-card at best. That's part of the reason that Dolph is in the spot he's in my opinion. He doesn't come off as a cool guy.
Yeah, there's always been something kind of missing that he's just not changed. And I think a lot of that is just he doesn't want to change, and he's kind of, you know, fought the man on that one. I don't know what you can do with him now. And I think there's certain people there that would probably say, we see the talent, but there's other things that go into it when it comes to your positioning and whatnot. And we know what we've got in Dolph, and this is it. And this is where it's going to be, unless there was like a rash of injuries where they felt like they had to do something different with him. I want to ask you about this, too, before we get out of here, because we're both on the same page when it comes to NXT, that WWE's got to make up their mind about how they want to use it and why they've got these talented guys that are, you know, in the prime of their career or already in their mid-30s. What are they doing down there rather than being on the main roster? Daniel Bryan even said this. you know, a week ago in that Talking Smack show. But here's the other question I have, because we talk about NXT as a brand to itself. You know, it's got a great following. They want to do something with it. And at the same time, they need to develop talent, but have some star power. But I'll question, you know, not only why certain guys are still there, not on the main roster, but I'll turn it the other way. Why are Baron Corbin, Apollo Crews, and Dana Brooke, those three in particular, on the main roster, rather than being, you know, stars at NXT?
I don't know why they do what they do with NXT. It's, I mean, I'm guessing it's they want it to mean something. They want it to be a successful touring brand. But before Daniel Bryan vented recently about those guys being left down there as long as, you know, the Shinsuke Nakamura's and Finn Balor's of the world and Samoa Joe's being left down too long. I mean, I've been banging that drum for a long time, and I don't think it's worth it. To me, it's like taking some baseball player who's in his prime and leaving them in AAA because you want your minor league team to do well attendance-wise. It's very strange to me. I think they just – I mean, if they've got a great vision for NXT and they really think it's going to blow up and be this third brand for them, I'm a little more understanding of it. But to a point, I mean, I think you can just take baby steps by having Baron Corbin, you know, the Baron Corbins of the world down there in a meaningful position and having Shinsuke Nakamura on the main roster where he belongs.
Yeah, it's just really strange right now to see that because it's reversed. And I know that they need some depth on the main talent, you know, rosters. And I understand that everybody's going to be a top guy, but you can't bring people up just for the sake of, oh, we're going to do a little bit of something with you, and then we're just going to keep you underneath just to fill out, you know, slots. To me, it's just like, if you're going to bring a guy up, give him a fair chance. And I see talent with all of them, but I don't think any of them were ready to be brought up, you know? And it's like, they've got a perfectly great place where they could still be learning and getting better and being used in different roles that you could play around with them and let them develop their character and improve in the ring. And that's what NXT is supposed to be used for, and they're not utilizing these guys in that role. Instead, they're just on the main roster, and they're just kind of bodies right now. I mean, we see them on TV. If not every week, we see them a decent amount, but it's just like, okay, what's this accomplishing?
Yeah, I mean, Corbin just kind of spun his wheels. He won the Battle Royal at WrestleMania and whatever, but he's just kind of spun his wheels otherwise. I mean, he traded wins and losses with Dolph, which made no sense to me. I mean, Hunter had this great talk about they want 6 months' worth of plans for these guys when they get called up. We're not seeing that. You know, we just don't. And I don't know if you blame him for that or if that's what he wants and it's just not happening because Vince McMahon calls the shots. And that might be some of this, too, is that I mean, from Hunter's standpoint, I think he's going to want NXT to shine. And so, yeah, he might keep a Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe down there longer than they need to be. But with Vince, it might be bring that Corbin guy up. He sees something in that Baron Corbin. He likes him. So even if Hunter was suggesting somebody else, ultimately Vince is probably going to be the one who has final say on that.
Oh, I'm sure he does. I just look at guys saying, hey, you know what? If you think they're ready to be brought up, unless they've been wrestling for, you know, 10, 15 years, like a Finn Balor or Samoa Joe, whatever, you know what? If you think you've got, if you're ready to bring them up, wait another 3 months. Wait another 6 months. Just give it a little bit more time. Unless you've got, you know, a long-term storyline, like you said, you know, like, hey, we've got a plan. We're going to execute that plan. But, and I know plans can change, but it's like, I don't know what they're doing up there, and you worry about it. Are they going to be wasted going forward?
Well, I'm sure it was with Baron Corbin. It was, oh, we'll have him win the WrestleMania Battle Royal. It'll be great.
He'll be a made man then. It's just like,
and then we'll have him work with Ziggler, and he can learn from Ziggler, and Ziggler will make him look like $1 million.
That's
fine.
That's it. Then let Dolph and Baron work together on house shows for 6 months.
Well, they did. Unfortunately, we also saw them on TV forever and trading right. Wins and losses. And when Dolph was branded the way he was as a scrub, the first time you saw him beat Baron Corbin, it was like, oh, this Baron Corbin guy doesn't mean that much. Yeah, I mean, hey, Baron Corbin had a nice night last night working with Dean Ambrose. And you know, I thought that went pretty well for him. But still, it's just kind of the bigger picture here. Yeah, he easily could have spent this however many months still in NXT meaning something. The counter argument might be is that there's only so much you're going to learn working at the NXT level. He's put a lot of time in. It was time for him to come up. But still, then you better have something better creatively than they did for him.
Yeah, that would be nice. So, well, it's been nice having you on the podcast. Everybody can follow Jason on Twitter. Just go to @prowrestling.net.
There's no dots on Twitter. So
oh, I'm sorry.
@prowrestling.net.
Pro Wrestling Net. I can't even write it down right. Pro Wrestling Net, you fool. And then, of course, you can go online to prowrestling.net. Sign up. Go. Be a member. You've got the different deals. You've got a monthly membership. You can sign up for 6 months or really save a lot of money and sign up for the year to get all the goodies being a member over there, including all the different podcasts that you do with the cast of characters or sometimes even yourself over there at the website, correct?
Absolutely. And Brian, I have one question for you.
Yes.
How far can you throw a football?
I don't know. That's a good question. I got to warm up the arm a little bit, but I'll tell you this.
Put a red jersey on you and give you a crack here.
Here's the problem. No, I don't know how far I can throw a football, but I can tell you, even though I am a grown man and standing in at 5'11", I'll admit this, I kind of have small hands and I can't really grip an NFL football that great.
Well, it sounds like you're describing Teddy Bridgewater.
He can probably grip it better than me.
Well, he's listed at 6'3". I'm not buying that.
No, he's not 6'3".
That was just a quick search on this, but yeah, he supposedly has the smallish hands. And the funny thing was, is like Aaron Rodgers is considered to have big hands and they're very comparable. I guess it doesn't take much. There's a real fine line there between big hands and small hands, apparently in the NFL.
Yeah.
Dante, your guy from UCF, he had small hands.
Yeah. Dante Culpepper had small hands. Yeah.
And fumbled all the time.
Yeah, I could be a fumbler if I was put in that position. Also, if I saw men running at me that size, that fast, I would probably just throw the ball to them and just say, here.
All the quarterback needs to do is just turn around and give it to Adrian all year long.
Give it to AP.
Basically,
man.
What's going to happen.
Give it to AP, give it to McKinnon, give it to Asiata, and just let them rip.
Yeah, so don't be taking like Stephon Diggs high or maybe even anywhere in your draft. But one little fantasy tidbit for you. I was listening on the radio today, and they said that this might make Laquon Treadwell, the first-round pick, he might have a bigger role in the offense because of this, because with Hill, you're going to be throwing more underneath-type stuff, and that's where he excels. So I'm not saying take him in your fantasy draft, but keep an eye on him.
I like it. Fantasy tips for sleepers out there. I like it.
Yeah.
So, well, best of luck in your draft coming up. I know you got your big draft coming up here in a few days. So
Saturday, all day, all night affair. It's going to be fun. There's going to be some poker involved. It's going to be a drunken. It's going to be a nice, quiet, sober affair, just in case my girlfriend's talking.
Well, you have a good time with that. We appreciate everybody for listening to the podcast. Please remember, you can subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher, Google Play. You can find it on the TuneIn app, and you can also find it on SoundCloud as well. And a quick reminder again, you can find Jason on Twitter. It's @ProWrestlingNet. And of course, go to ProWrestling.net, sign up, become a member, and enjoy all the perks that go along with that. So thanks again to everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.